Calvin Warren joins us now, current assistant chief pilot at Lewis University. Calvin, I'm excited to have you on the air. Thanks for hopping on with us.
Yeah, thank you. Excited to be here.
I think a lot of people are more nervous flyers than maybe they were a year or two ago. It hasn't been a banner year for aviation with a lot of stories making headlines. Let's just start it out just as a broad strokes thing. Calvin, flying is still incredibly, incredibly safe. Yeah.
Yeah, it's one of the most safest forms or modes of transportation out there. We always say, you know, you're more likely to get into an accident driving to the airport, right, than once you actually get to the airport and get on the aircraft.
I wanted to ask, after takeoff, I always feel like we've got full power going. I feel great. The wheels come off. The wheels go back in. The landing gear goes up. And then at a certain point, I feel like there's like a dial back of the acceleration. And I don't know if we drop, but it almost kind of has that sensation of that. We aren't dropping or decelerating too much, are we? What's happening when we just after takeoff as we start to cruise up a little bit?
Yeah, and there's a multitude of reasons that could be happening. Noise abatement procedures are probably one of the more common ones. You know, we realize airports right nowadays are kind of built in sometimes areas that are a little bit more built up with houses. So once you take off, they'll reduce that engine power a little bit, just be a little bit more kind to neighbors. Those aircraft, they're built to fly with one engine not even working. So just pulling it back a little bit on takeoff, you still have more than enough power to keep going.
Same thing in the climb, right? That's a little bit less power once you kind of get going off the takeoff.
Right, yeah. Once you're climbing out, they'll pull it back. It can climb single engine, too.
Okay.
So you're definitely safe. Noise abatement, and sometimes ATC just needs you to level off a little bit. Maybe there's other traffic in the area, and once they get out of the way, they'll have you start climbing back up to the smoother air up top.
ATC is air traffic control, I assume?
Yeah, yep, the traffic controllers.
Okay, Kevin, I know you have a couple questions out of the sports desk about flying.
Sure, yeah, it wasn't really a question. I had just randomly happened to see this stat today, and I brought it up when John teased the pilot segment. How many airports we have in the U.S., which some of the estimates I saw were around 15,000, almost 16,000, way more than second place Brazil, which has about 4,800 is one number I saw, Australia 2,100. I guess maybe if you could just elaborate on that. I mean, I'm sure money factors in. I know other countries rely on different ways of travel, like train. But that was a big number and a huge gap from number two in the amount of airports per country list I saw.
Any guesses, Calvin?
Can you say that number for me one more time? I'm sorry.
The number I have in front of me, and I've seen a few different ones, but 15,873.
Airports in the U.S.
And Brazil was second with just under 5,000.
Right, and that could be, you know, a multitude of reasons. The size of the United States, like you said, air travel is one of the larger mode of transportation here. But also, the United States has a very large general aviation population as well, where a lot of those smaller airports that they're counting, they might not, you know, they might have one or two commercial flights, but they're really like GA aircraft, flight training, people who own their own airplanes. That's a lot more prevalent in the United States than other countries, which is why our airport numbers are a little bit higher, as you noted, than the rest of the world.
Well, we invented flying, so, you know, we got a little spirit amongst us, don't we?
Exactly.
Okay, 312-917-2200. Get on the phone right now if you got a question for a pilot. You can text on in as well. Calvin joins us now. Calvin Warren, he's the assistant chief pilot at Lewis University, a great school for many different disciplines. I discovered it, and I knew about Lewis, but I went down and visited the Romeoville campus for your hometown, was kind of blown away at all the different programs they have at Lewis, and they're known very well for their aviation school. That's why they're the Flyers. And Calvin, I imagine you're proud of all you guys do at Lewis, huh?
Oh yeah, I went to school here, then I started working here and like that, and happy with every decision.
Okay, ask a pilot, what is the most dangerous part of flight, landing or taking off?
That would probably be landing. There is a lot more that could happen, just, you know, bringing in and getting this approach stabilized, and there's not as many options when something were to go wrong because you're kind of already in that descent phase.
But you don't have as much fuel on the plane, so that's at least good, right?
Yep, that is true. Yeah, you're not going to be as heavy or loaded down with fuel on the landing.
Okay, David Jennings in the newsroom's got a question.
Out of curiosity, when you get together with your fellow pilots and you watch stuff that goes on and things that we've seen happen, in terms of in runway incursions, et cetera. How dissatisfied are the pilots with the FAA and some of the rather disturbing things that we hear about how old some of the gear that the air traffic controllers have to contend with?
Well, that's a good question. Calvin?
Where I fly, at least where I fly here, just at the university, the FAA for us has always been great. Air traffic controllers, their systems are older. I know they're having troubles out in, like, the East Coast with just that much traffic. It's hard, though, because that's what works. You know, that's what they've been using. Two-way radio, it is such an old technology, but it's just what's best currently. I know there are phases that they're trying to implement more GPS and things like that, but even GPS isn't perfect. GPS can go down, so still having these older backup systems is also just as important. I never get dissatisfied, though. Whenever I do talk to my friends at the airliners who are working at the airlines, they're, we all want to see, continuous improvement, but we also know just with how safety and mind everything has to be, you can't do things quickly. You really got to make sure everything's 100% before you release it out into the world, if you would.
Yeah. 815 wants to know, how much of the flight is autopilot for an average commercial flight?
For an average commercial flight, it depends on the pilot, but usually it's going to be most of it. Takeoff and landing are usually what's done mostly by hand, by pilot, unless the weather is very bad. That's when they might turn on the autopilot and have that do the landing. But once they're in cruise, the autopilot is mostly on then as well, because that just gives the pilots more time to look outside and monitor the instruments. So it's a good majority of it, probably more than 50%.
Interesting. I didn't know I thought you would use autopilot if the weather, or I thought you would fly it yourself if the weather was bad and land it yourself. But you're saying that the autopilot's used in a bad weather landing. Why? Because just the systems are just more reactive and quicker at adjusting to wind shear and things along those lines?
When I say bad weather, I guess I more refer to like lower cloud ceiling, ceilings and things like that. When the pilots can't see the runway, the system can. There is a technology to land with like no visibility, but that's not necessary. That's not used all the time, because once you land, then it's like, okay, well, where do you go? You can't see because the visibility is so bad. But there are those systems help the pilots when the weather is bad in terms of like visibility, cloud clearances, things like that.
Oh, that makes sense. 303, do pilots really know what all the buttons in the cockpit do?
Yes, they do. And they go to schooling for months at a time to learn what each of those button switches do. When one light goes off, special checklists that they have to follow. They're in school for a couple of months just learning one aircraft.
Wow. 847, do pilots get nervous taking off or landing ever?
When they're starting out, probably. I know when I fly with private students here, those are students who are just, like, they're just starting, like, day one. Private pilots is what they're called. They're definitely nervous. Probably the first airline job, they're probably nervous then. But once you get into a flow to it, at this point, I'm still amazed. Every time I take off, I'm like, I can't believe I'm doing this.
You're enthralled by it. 773, yeah. Do the pilots take naps during autopilot?
No, not. The U.S. does not allow naps to be taken by pilots. I believe some countries do have rest policies, but if you're on a longer flight, like the, getting into the 15, 17-hour flights, that's when they'll have multiple crews, so like 3 to 4 pilots, and then they rotate, so then some pilots can rest while there's still 2 pilots in the cockpit.
773, is it getting more turbulent out there?
Not that I've noticed. I've only been flying at the lower altitudes, though, so I'm still pretty comfortable.
Okay. I do know that some people think that it's getting more turbulent in the upper air, but I want to find a reputable source before I just say, yeah, for sure it is. But on turbulence, the 630 says, is it really not all that dangerous? I know that they keep on saying that it's not. They're just air pockets. But, boy, it's disconcerting.
It's, it all just depends on, like, what you hit. Clear air turbulence can be pretty severe. Probably the worst you're going to get. That's also kind of out of nowhere. Nowadays, though, one thing technology has done very well is, like, pilots are able to report turbulence when they hit it, and the pilots flying the aircraft behind them see that report, and then they can do something to help avoid it. So they are trying to make turbulence awareness. You know, the pilots, if they want to give the passengers as smooth of a ride as they can, so anything they can do to avoid what they know is there, they will do.
Clear air turbulence, is that exactly what it sounds like? Turbulence in out of nowhere?
Basically, it's kind of unexpected. It just happens in those higher jet stream areas. There's just some like turbulence that, you know, just happens kind of not necessarily out of nowhere. There's definitely more scientific words than,
yes,
you know, a basic pilot, even a pilot at the airline might understand, but yeah.
Okay. 630, my son is interested in aviation. Are there still jobs needed for pilots?
Yes. Oh, yes. There's still, we call it like the pilot shortage and whatnot. Their hiring is a little slow right now. I see it with like our instructors who are getting ready to go. But once the retirements, you know, keep on starting to cycle through, the airlines will just start, you know, hiring up anyone they can who's qualified.
I'm glad you added that last part, because the 219 texted, what are airlines' hiring standards? I don't know if this is and I don't want to assign words to the 219. I know there's been a lot of discussions of DEI and hiring, but and you answer this however you see fit, but I would imagine that if you get a pilot at the front of a plane, they've been qualified and trained to do the job to do it.
Correct, yeah. Every pilot who at least, you know, who goes through the airlines, they all have to meet the same ATP minimums. That's airline transport pilot. It's a certificate that you get. It's special training that you go through. It has hour minimums that you have to hit. For unrestricted, you need 1,500 hours flying. And then that's broken down into more specific categories, but every pilot up there has those minimums. And then once they are hired, that's when they go to those month-long schools where they learn everything about that specific aircraft and how to fly it. And they all go through that same training.
847, what's the best route to get to be a pilot like schooling? We got 30 seconds. What's the best route in terms of getting to get that job?
Most likely it's going to be through a collegiate program, like either, I mean, there's a bunch of them, you know, Lewis, obviously, I'm going to say
you're
that's
partial, yeah.
Right. But I mean, Purdue, UND, Embry-Riddle, Terre Haute, Indiana State University, they all have great flight programs as well. Cause that you get your bachelor's degree, which the airlines usually look for. And then you get, restricted ATP minimums, which do allow you to go to the airlines a little sooner. But that's because they deem our quality of training better.
So it's a 4-year school and then maybe some additional schooling too.
It's a 4-year school to get your degree, and then you're going through the airline school once you get hired by them.
Okay. Calvin, we got some other callers coming in, but we're out of time. I hope we can do this again.
Oh, yes, I'd enjoy it greatly.
All right. Ask a pilot. First time we did this, Calvin Warren, current assistant chief pilot at Lewis University. Take care, my friend.